Good evening and welcome to Thinking Out Loud on KBIA. I'm Darren Helwedge. With February being Black History Month, we look at civil rights activism in the past and present day, and in particular, the role of the African American Church from the early days of our nation to the Martin Luther King era and the present day and reaction to the shooting in Ferguson of Michael Brown. Our guest, Reverend C.W. Dawson, heads the African American Clergy Coalition of Mid-Missouri. Tonight in part one of a two-part program, we discuss the church and civil rights activism and how it's changed over the years. C.W. Dawson and me in part one of a two-part Thinking Out Loud, next on KBIA. It's Thinking Out Loud from KBIA, and our guest this evening is the Reverend Dr. C.W. Dawson. He is the founder and president of Dawson Journeys Ministries, is an adjunct professor at Columbia College, and is the founder of the African American Clergy Coalition of Mid-Missouri. He holds an MDiv, a Master's of Divinity from Princeton, and a PhD from the University of Missouri. C.W., welcome. Great to talk to you today.
Thank you for having me. It's good to be here.
Absolutely. Lots of introduction there. The main thing we want to talk about today is the Clergy Coalition. The African American Clergy Coalition of Mid-Missouri, pretty new. Talk to me about the purpose of the organization, why this group was put together.
Well, our purpose really is threefold. First is to provide an opportunity for people who have no voice or feel that they have no voice, to have a prophetic witness to be able to speak for them. One of the things I've noticed, for instance, is that every time I go to testify on behalf of someone in the courts, that most of the people who are convicted have no idea what is being said around them. Generally, they'll have a public defender who's overworked and underpaid and has really no time to meet with the client. I watched a kid 25 years old get 25 years in the federal court and had no clue what they were talking about around him. There are people, for instance, who go down to social services or to Volunteer Action Center, and the people who work there are very nice and very knowledgeable, but you have to know how to ask the right questions. And a lot of times the folk who go are ill-equipped, whether it's to speak to the teacher about Pookie in school or whatever the situation, who speaks for those who have been muted? And so we see ourselves as agents of reconciliation in speaking for those who cannot, have not, do not speak for themselves. The second purpose is to better equip African-American clergy in particular, but clergy in general, to equip their churches. One of the things that I've noticed is that there are lots of clergy folk in this area who have not had an opportunity to go to school. They haven't been able to go to seminary. They don't have a theological background. And even sometimes in some of our larger churches, there are folk who have advanced degrees but don't have theological degrees.
Okay.
And so what we wanted to do is find a way to provide for clergy an opportunity to better equip themselves theologically and biblically. Now what you have to do is either go to Kansas City or you have to go to St. Louis in order to get theological training. One of the things I've been trying to do is speak with Stevens, speak with University of Missouri, speak with Columbia College, in providing AA or certificate programs geared toward pastoring leadership in the African-American church. There are some places here who provide some educational tools, but they don't provide those tools geared toward the African-American church. And I'm a believer still that, A, in spite of Eddie Glaude and the Princeton connection, that the Black church still exists. And the second thing is that I think that there are some nuances within the confines of the Black church that need to be addressed and are not addressed simply at looking at church history from a European perspective.
And
third thing
yeah,
is that to provide fellowship. In returning to the Midwest, I was both heartened in the fact that there are still churches who get together and fellowship and do things. Sunday afternoon is probably the busiest time for most African-American clergy of the week, because you'll preach in your own, with your own parish, and then be invited to preach somewhere in the afternoon, and that's good. When I was in Florida, there was very little fellowship. Everybody was into building their own fiefdom. Here, there is that fellowship. The problem is that it is parochial. So the bishoprics get together, and those churches that are non-denominational, whose leadership is based on a kind of bishop style, they all get together, but they don't get together with the Baptists, who don't get together with the United Methodists, who don't get together with, and you see how this goes.
Sure.
When in fact that the issues of joy and struggle that those churches face are the same.
Mm-hmm.
And there needs to be a way in which we fellowship together, we talk, we get together, to talk about our joys and our sorrows. And I did not see that happening here. And so the African-American Clergy Coalition Mid-Missouri was birthed.
C.W. Dawson is our guest, the founder and president of Dawson Journeys Ministries and founder of the African-American Clergy Coalition of Mid-Missouri. In talking about the church's involvement in civil rights and equality issues, one of the things that came to mind was a meeting that I had the opportunity to attend last year here in town at Second Baptist with William Barber in town. And Reverend Barber, for people who are not aware, has been very involved with the Moral Mondays movement in North Carolina. I believe he was recently elected to the National Board of the NAACP. And the Moral Mondays movement really was kind of a reaction to a lot of things happening in North Carolina, but obviously far more universal issues, voting rights, education, access to health care, a lot of things like that. Talk about how the church as a whole, and particularly the Black church, is getting involved in some of these, what some would say are political issues.
Right. Well, first about Reverend Barber. Reverend Barber was nurtured in an African-American religious culture that did not make a separation between what kind of person I am politically or socially over and against what I confess to be as a Christian. It was all part of the same mixture. And the Moral Monday movement, I think the power of it was that it demanded that all those conversations about Medicaid expansion, voter suppression, on and on and on, become conversations grounded in a moral context, not just a political one. So it's not just about Republican, Democrat, Independent, or rural versus urban, white versus Black. It's about a moral context that suggests that there is a deontological kind of framework, a framework of duty, moral duty that we have to one another, that we are responsible to one another, not for. And so I think what Reverend Barber has done is forced all of us to once again to think about these issues in a moral context. But again, I think that he is the product of the Black church at its best. Just very quickly, I think that there are three movements that have happened in the Black church. The first movement was kind of around the civil rights movement in the present day, kind of around the civil rights movement with Dr. King and others. And then the second movement of the Black church has been more a priestly, I'm going to take care of myself, want to get to heaven, I got to find favor, which I am opposed to. And then the third one now is an attempt to rearticulate what's important about being part of the Black church and its responsibility in the world. I think at our best, we look like Reverend Barber. I think at our worst, we look like a charlatan selling blessed handkerchiefs.
And the difference that I can see there is about who it's focused on. Is it focused on me? What do I get out of it? Or what pain am I trying to avoid? Or is it about compassion for others, right?
Yeah, and I think that that is universally a problem of the church, is that too often people come to church and ask either to be entertained or what's in it for me, instead of changing the vocabulary to we, us, and our. And that, to me, is a clear sign of where you are in your growth.
As far as community involvement, civil rights involvement, equality issues, however one wants to phrase this, this stuff all got a whole lot more focused upon, obviously, in the last year with the shooting in Ferguson of Michael Brown. And just that's become the buzzword for this. You just put a big umbrella over everything and say Ferguson. Yeah. But as we were talking about before we came on the air, that's just one of a whole lot of incidents that one could look at in sort of the same light and a much bigger concern and a much bigger thing that's being dealt with.
Right. I think what made Ferguson unique is that it awakened us from a sleep that we had been in. We expected the kind of problem we had in Florida. I mean, it's Florida. They have funky voting machines. It's Florida, you know. And so while it was tragic, we kind of said, that would happen to somebody like Trayvon Martin. We kind of expect that kind of nonsense in New York. You know, I never will forget, I was trying to catch a cab in New York. I had just presented, I thought, a wonderful piece on Aristotle. I had on my preacher clothes. I looked really good. I had my hat on. And for 20 minutes, I couldn't get a cab because I look like I look. So you kind of expect that there. But in Ferguson, no, not in St. Louis, not in Missouri. I mean, Missouri it's had its problems, but it was exempt from that kind of action. I mean, black and white folk get together and at least have celebrations and act like, you know, we're kind of beyond that. And then it happened. And what we found out is that what happened in Ferguson has been happening in Missouri and across this country for a long time. It brought home a claim that had been stated but very few paid attention to. The world that African Americans live in is a world qualitatively different than Anglo people live in. I did not grow up in a neighborhood, and I grew up in the black middle class. You know, I had mom and dad at home, and yet the police were never my friend. They were always the enemy. They were always to be avoided. And now think about living in a context where you are economically underemployed or unemployed, that the disparity is great. You go to school. We used to run a tutoring program where I was in Florida. And so we ran, the program consisted of reading and math and science, because I think those three are necessary if a kid is going to get better and be successful in academia. So a little girl came to one of the tutors about math. She said, I have a math problem I need you to figure out. And so she was working with the tutor, and they were getting along. She goes, And she said, why are you asking me this question? She said, well, the answer is when my dad is going to be released from prison. And I tried to ask my math teacher at school, and she said, oh, you're one of them. There's no need of me working with you because I know how you're going to wind up. When you tell a kid that from the beginning, that's why Michelle Alexander's book on the new Jim Crow is so powerful, because we're setting up the context of the school-to-prison pipeline. Well, what Ferguson did is make us, arrested our attention once again to the problems that are systematically present in this great American experiment and that we're going to have to deal with or they will destroy us.
C.W. Dawson is our guest. He is the founder and president of Dawson Journeys Ministries and founded the African American Clergy Coalition of Mid-Missouri here in Columbia. It's Thinking Out Loud on KBIA. I'm Darren Helwedge. C.W., what about this particular case has made it so much of a boiling point for a lot of things? I mean, as we said, there have been so many of these. We mentioned Trayvon, Oscar Grant. Why is it this one that's really fired up as much as it has?
I think the media paid more attention. And I do think that the context of Missouri being kind of above and beyond it, even though we were a slave state, even though there's all kinds of unwritten rules around in Missouri.
Well, you talked about the fact that Trayvon's in Florida, Oscar Grant was San Francisco. This is middle America, man.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, we just have those old-fashioned Midwestern values and, you know, people are people and on and on. And you know, the other thing is that the issue at Ferguson brought us back to the reality. I mean, lots of people I talk to, particularly Anglo people, would talk to me about we live now in a post-racial society, that we've gotten beyond race. There's no such thing as race anymore. We all know it's a social construct that we have created, blase, blase, blase. And then it brought back the fact that it was real. Notice that we had two sets of witnesses.
Right.
We had witnesses who said, hey, you know, the guy had his hands up, he had surrendered and was shot. And then we had witnesses who said, no, he was moving in a kind of aggressive manner.
Threatening manner, yeah.
And you know, look at the red places on Officer Wilson's face. I mean, so what is the truth in that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, one thing that is very evident, it points to the fact that how we perceive reality in this country, racially, is very, very different.
How we perceive as far as how white people are looking at it, how black people are looking at it, what are the most important issues here, what are the facts of the matter, who do you trust to find the reality, whom do you not trust to find the reality, do you believe the man in the blue suit, do you have questions at least about the man in the blue suit or the woman in the blue suit? That's what
right.
You're talking about there.
That's what I'm talking about. And it spills over to a whole lot of contexts. How do you live in a majority municipal arena where you have no representation on the city council?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And what does that mean? I mean, I want representation, but I don't want Clarence Thomas. What becomes the most appropriate representation for the people who are to be served? So I think Ferguson really brought a lot of issues to the table that we have to deal with. May I do one more with you? In the state of Missouri, we're dealing with this whole thing about Medicaid expansion.
Right.
And one of the problems is the picture in which people see Medicaid expansion, i.e., who's going to be served by the expansion.
Sure.
And the picture that people are seeing are black and urban. When the fact of the matter is the people who will be most helped in the state of Missouri are rural and white and female.
Yeah.
But we don't get that picture. And so, you know, what's the image being presented? And I think Ferguson, what it has done is pushed us once again to have an open, honest dialogue about race and systemic racism in this area, in this country, in this state. And how do we dismantle it?
Getting back a little bit into the kind of topic of the conversation, talk to me about the role that the church played in the protests in and around Ferguson following the Brown shooting. Because there's obviously been a role, but it's been interesting to watch how different groups, there's been some... This isn't about a protest movement jumped up and everybody agreed on who was in charge and everybody agreed what they believed in and everybody agreed for what they stood for and where the protest was going to happen this day and where we were going to go get coffee after. There was a lot of levels to this.
Lots of levels. First of all, the protests in Ferguson pointed to the emergence of young people's leadership again. Literally, there were young people who said, we don't want the old guard here if they think they're going to take over. You can be here and you can be supportive, but you can't take over. And that has never happened before. It's always been that the old guard tells the new guard where to stand, what to say, and where to move. And that did not happen in Ferguson. Secondly, it was an interracial religious participation. It was Anglo, it was Black, it was Latino, it was Jewish and Christian. It was atheistic, agnostic, and religious. It was people who came together who decided that an injustice had been done and that to speak truth to power was more important than letting it go. That was impressive. One of the things that people assumed, for instance, was that somebody in the protest was the one who set fire to the buildings and threw the thing. And one of the rabbis out of that area said to me, she said, how do we know who started it and who was behind it? It was just assumed that it was the protesters and maybe someone else.
It's worth noting that one of the buildings that was burned in the immediate aftermath of the shooting was the church to which Michael Brown's father belonged. It seems a little unlikely that protesters would have gone and burned his dad's church down.
Exactly. And so that there's a lot of question about that. But notice that the conservatives in this whole dialogue immediately went to the riot, the burning, that kind of thing, instead of talking about heroines and heroes, you know, who stood on the line, who were willing to be arrested, who were willing to raise their voice in a peaceful kind of way. Dr. Cassandra Gould out of Jefferson City, she tells people she was in Ferguson more, she was in her home church in Jeff City. Tracy Blackman, on and on. People, women in particular, who stood their ground and were willing to speak truth to power. Now, that gets overlooked, and so it's caused some real tension, but it seems to me it's a manifestation of what the Black church has done throughout history. People focus on, particularly this time of year, right? Really, Black History Month starts January 15th.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so we just kind of go on from Martin to now. But the fact of the matter is that both Martin and Malcolm represent the primary question for African Americans in this culture. Do we stay or do we go? And if we stay, what is our hope? Are we like Baldwin and believe we're living in a house on fire? Or do we believe that there's something worth salvaging in this house since all of us have tears in the bricks and prayers in the mortar of this country that's worth staying? And it started from the very beginning, since 16 and 19, and has continued until this day.
I want to get more into talking about history, but you brought to my attention something that I think is a very interesting thing to talk about. When we think about Dr. King and we think about the leaders of the civil rights movement at that time, there's a whole lot of faces that pop into my mind, and nearly every one of them is a guy.
Yeah.
A lot of the ministers we've talked about, a lot of the political leaders we've talked about, Representative Chappelle and Dowell, a lot of the leadership now is women. How does that change the face of the civil rights movement that there are so many women leaders now?
Well, I think, you know, it shows that we are trying to be honest and aware. The fact of the matter is that Martin was not a saint. Martin wasn't perfect. He was the right person with the right message at the right time. But Martin was sexist. Martin was homophobic. And I think what's happened now is that to do social action, social justice, activism in the 21st century, we're going to have to examine ourselves. We can no longer be sexist. We can no longer be homophobic. Bell Hooks, in a little article she wrote on the ethic of love, said she was at a cocktail party and just found it absolutely despicable that there were people who were talking about the evils of racism but were sexist and homophobic. Don't you understand? Oppression is oppression is oppression. Yeah. And so I think what's happening that we're seeing in these demonstrations of protest is that we're trying to come of age, that homophobia and sexism are just as oppressive as racism, and that if we're going to be free, we have to attack all the demons against freedom.
C.W. Dawson is our guest. The Reverend Dr. Dawson is the president and founder of Dawson Journeys Ministries and is an adjunct professor at Columbia College. He founded the African American Clergy Coalition of Mid-Missouri. As we were talking about Dr. King, and as we get into that, and you started getting into this just a little bit ago, the role of the church in civil rights going back as far as we can.
Yeah.
As you said, the very beginning, 1617, abolition, a lot of the leadership there, not all, but a lot of it came from within the church. I think it's easy to forget that Dr. King was also Reverend King and was right. A minister, and that the church was a big part of that. Talk about that a little bit and how important that's been just throughout history.
Well, you know, when I was in school, in graduate school, people talked to me about the fact that Dr. King's education honed him to be a great instrument for the civil rights movement because he had read Brightman, because he had read his Rauschenbusch, because he had read Anglo folk who were both liberal and supportive of social justice, that's what kind of honed him and made him able to speak about the issues the way he did. I disagree with that. I think that those individuals were helpful and instrumental. Mm-hmm. But Martin found out that he was somebody by sitting as a little kid in the black church, right? He had a black pastor to tell him, you are made in the image and likeness of God. You are somebody.
And I'm afraid that's going to have to be our stopping point for this evening. As we're running out of time, we will have more of my conversation with C.W. Dawson of the African American Clergy Coalition in part two of this special Thinking Out Loud next Tuesday evening. So listen in for that here on KBIA for Thinking Out Loud in part two of this program. You can catch past shows in the Thinking Out Loud series. Just go to kbia.org and click on Programs for Thinking Out Loud. And Thinking Out Loud is on Facebook and Twitter as well. Just go to Facebook or Twitter and search for KBIA Thinking Out Loud for the program, and you can follow us there. This evening's program was produced by Ross Terrell. The associate producer of Thinking Out Loud is Trevor Harris. Again, join us again next Tuesday evening, part two of our conversation with the Reverend Dr. C.W. Dawson of Dawson Journeys Ministries and the African American Clergy Coalition of Mid-Missouri on Thinking Out Loud. Till then, I'm Darren Hellwedge. Have a great evening.